Every Wednesday is always dedicated to Pentagon Solutions. We take a deep dive look at experts in defense issues, both inside and outside DOD, sharing ideas that leaders in the Pentagon and the contracting community can use to solve the big challenges the defense community plays. And one of the experts inside the DOD is joining me today. Catherine Hammack is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations and Environment in the Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army. And it is terrific to have you in studio. Thank you very much for being here today.
Glad to be here, Charlie. And I've got to tell you one thing. We changed the name of the department from Secretary of Installations and Environment to Installations, Energy and Environment, recognizing how important energy is to our soldiers.
And that is why I wanted you to come in today. I want to talk to you, first of all, among the many things that we'll cover today, about net zero and the concept of net zero. And I'd like you to start as though I don't know anything about it other than the name that I've come across. I've done a little bit of research on it, but talk to me about net zero from the very beginning, if you would.
I'd be delighted to. Net zero energy is about using the same amount of energy that you produce from alternative energy sources. So when we talk about net zero energy for our Army base, what we first want to do is reduce the amount of energy that is consumed on that base. After we reduce the amount of energy, we want to look at ways we can reuse energy. So there's waste energy streams. And then we look at repurposing energy, and we look at a hierarchy of needs, the last thing being producing energy from alternative energy sources. So net zero energy is a priority, but we also look at net zero water, because when you use water, that water has to be pumped out of the ground. It has to be treated, it has to be distributed, and then it has to be treated at the end of the life cycle. All of those steps consume energy.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk net zero, we're talking energy, we're talking water, but we're also talking waste. Net zero means that you're recycling your waste stream and you're not putting waste into landfill.
The concept of net zero came from where? Where did the Army decide this is something that we need to pay attention to the degree that you've developed this program?
I came from the private sector, and in the private sector, net zero is a concept that has been developing for quite a while. And when I got a call from the White House to take this position, one of the things they asked me to do was to bring net zero to the Army. And it is a framework in which everybody understands what the ultimate goal is. The ultimate goal is we want to be good stewards of the resources that we have available.
Mm-hmm.
We do not want to be a drain on a fragile power grid that we have out there. We've all seen what happens when tornadoes come through or floods disrupt power sources. So when we are net zero, we're able to manage that base regardless of what goes on in the environment outside that base.
What did you find when you got to the Army and started to work on this program? What kind of a reception did you get from all aspects of the members of the service?
Everyone has really embraced it. And what has amazed me is when I go out and visit the installations, the phenomenal work that our soldiers and civilians and contractors are already doing on the basis. But what we weren't doing as well as we could is communicate with each other. And so we are developing a communication strategy where those bases that are striving toward net zero communicate what's working and what's not working, not only among themselves and among their Army counterparts, but also among the other services. So we are working very closely with the Air Force and Navy on their basing strategies and working on technologies and other technologies and strategies that could have application across all the military services.
I want to come back to the collaboration element. We talked about that a little bit before we went on the air, and I want to get back to that because there's a misconception there that I want to hopefully dispel a little bit. But speaking of dispelling misconceptions, the idea that someone would bring a concept like you brought in, and I think there are a lot of folks that probably would be surprised that you got the kind of reception that you did. I think there are a lot of people that assume that folks in the military are going to say, well, we've always done it this way, so we're going to keep doing it that way.
What we did is we asked installations to self-nominate themselves that they were going to strive to be net zero in either energy, water, waste, or all three,
mm-hmm,
by 2020. And what amazed me is we got over 100 self-applications from installations across the world saying that this is a program that they thought they could meet this goal. We narrowed it down to 17 installations that are really going to stand up and assume leadership, try new things, accept that at times they might make mistakes, but they're going to work toward getting there. What is interesting is some of those installations that did not get nominated as or selected as part of the pilot program have stepped up and said, well, you know what? We're going to get there ahead of those that were pilots. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of become a competition.
Yeah.
Everyone really wants to be that first base that is recognized by leadership in this nation as being net zero. And it really is a pilot for the nation mm-hmm. because we've got small towns and communities that are smaller than our installations. Our installations might have thousands of buildings on them.
Mm-hmm.
They have families that live there. They have schools. They have office buildings. They have maintenance facilities, restaurants, entertainment. We really are a community there, and we can demonstrate what communities can do when they strive toward a common purpose.
There seems to me to have been a shift over the maybe the past 5 years when it comes to environmental and energy understanding. And a lot of it seems to have revolved around cost. It seems that at least there was the impression in a lot of people's minds that for a long time it was more expensive to be environmentally conscious, to be green, and that qualified when it came to certifying buildings, LEED certifying buildings, and all kinds of things. And I think more and more agencies, more and more organizations are understanding that there's a return on investment now, especially when you look at life cycle as opposed to in startup costs to a lot of these things. Is that the case?
Absolutely. It's got to be fiscally prudent. It's mm-hmm. got to have a good return on investment. And that's why we say we're striving toward net zero, because we might find that that last 2% is not fiscally prudent to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's also mission critical, because if our fragile infrastructure, let's say that there's a power outage, everyone depends upon the Army, the National Guard, or the reserves to help out in case of emergency. So that's what we're there to do. And if we can't operate our own bases, then we're not serving that mission that the nation has given us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mission critical for us to have energy security and water security so that we can function in case of calamity.
How long ago did you develop the list of the 17 bases that are going to start this pilot?
We announced that in mid-April.
Okay.
And we just got everyone together in mid-June, and they're putting together their strategies and their benchmarks, and we are working with them. Some of them are maybe 50% of the way there. Some are a little bit further, some are a little bit further ahead, some are a little bit further behind.
Mm-hmm.
But what was great is when we got these installations together, they learned from each other. Just the collaboration of these guys talking to each other
mm-hmm.
and saying, hey, my problem, you found a solution
mm-hmm.
to. And that sharing of ideas is one of the best ways, we think, to move us forward toward the net zero goal.
Give me some examples, if you can, of some of the bases that are going to be involved. I don't need all 17, but we will get the list from the website and post it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later. But if I could just get a flavor of some of the sizes and types of the bases that are involved and some of the locations, because you mentioned they're not only limited to United States bases.
Absolutely. For an instance, one is Fort Detrick, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And Fort Detrick, Maryland has a research and a medical mission. So they're not your typical Army base. But then we have a typical Army base such as Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Washington State. That mm-hmm. is a very large joint base with the Air Force and the Army that has about 70,000-plus soldiers and airmen there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just picking the small ones. We're picking all sizes. Kwajalein Atoll, which is in the Marshall Islands, I mean, it's a very interesting scenario there that all of their power is generated from diesel engines, from mm-hmm. Generators, and that diesel comes from Japan. So you know what happened when that earthquake hit Japan is their supply got interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And it really has come to hit them that they've got to figure out how to be more self-reliant
mm-hmm.
and look at things, whether it's tidal or thermal energy or wave energy or solar or wind. And we're talking with the Navy about piloting some technologies there and working on technologies that could be transferred to Guam. So the services are working together on these strategies, and this is a great identification of those bases that are going to be piloting and testing those strategies.
I mentioned misconceptions. Were there misconceptions inside the Army when this first started up and you first started to talk about this? Were there things that people didn't quite get that now they're starting to get as you move forward?
I think some thought it was going to be very, very difficult. But as we talked about becoming net zero energy and first reducing the amount of energy you use, one of the installations has already reduced their energy consumption by 47% in the last 4 years.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah.
And that means that the balance of energy that they consume can be offset by solar or wind. But first you have to reduce the amount of energy you use and focus on reducing consumption, because that's the cheapest energy savings or the cheapest way to achieve net zero.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the competitive nature of the bases and some of the bases that didn't get selected. And I imagine that will go a long way just by the nature of the kinds of people who are involved in this.
Absolutely. And I was Fort Myer, Henderson Hall. I was up there today talking with those guys. And they applied but were not identified as one of the first set a pilot net zero, that yet they spent all this morning talking about how they were going to get to net zero,
mm-hmm,
and what great things they were already doing on that base to get there.
It's fascinating stuff, and I would talk some more about the collaborative things that we've touched on so far when we come back from the break. Catherine Hammock is my guest, Assistant Secretary of the Army on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pentagon Solutions continuing in just a moment.
Join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language, with no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills? You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know, that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612 and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us. Today, visit redcross.org.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. When it comes to information for wounded warriors, one agency leads the way in fostering interagency collaboration, and so many federal agencies are on the move. We'll have a special panel discussion on the best practices for moving people across town or across country. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Assistant Secretary of the Army Catherine Hammack is here for Pentagon Solutions today, and we're talking about energy usage in the Army and efforts to reduce energy. And we talked about net zero in the first segment, and one of the elements that surprised me as I prepared to have you come and talk about this, and I guess at this point, as I observe these issues, I shouldn't continue to be surprised, but there's a perception that the services operate in such silos that interaction is not very common and that collaboration among the services is not very common. And the thing that surprises me is how little of that is really true. And you and I talked before we went on the air about the I made the comment that no doubt people from the Navy and the Air Force are going to be listening and copying what you're doing at the Army. And your response to that was?
Oh, they already are, but we're working very closely together. When we talk about energy in the Army, we talk about soldier power, basing power, and vehicle power. And one of the areas that we're working very, very closely with the other services on is soldier power. For us, we call it soldier power, but the Marines have foot soldiers as well who are deploying with various strategies and technologies. One of the issues for our soldiers is that we're equipping them with technology that uses energy, and that energy is powered by batteries. And so each battery has a weight to it. We've gotten to the point where on a soldier, about 5 pounds of the weight they carry is due to batteries. Now, if they're going out on an 8-hour patrol, they'll carry those 5 pounds of batteries in the equipment and another 5 pounds of backup batteries. If they're going out on a 2-day patrol, they'll carry another 5 pounds. So now you're up to 15 pounds of batteries. And the Army and the Marines, working very closely together, have worked on developing recharging strategies. So each of those batteries can be rechargeable batteries. And now the question is, how do you recharge when you're out in the middle of nowhere? And we've worked with a couple of different things. One of them is methanol fuel cells that operate on a packaged fuel mixture in a cartridge. And that cartridge is tethered to a system that can recharge. It's about 300 watts of power, 4 hours per cartridge. So it can recharge several different devices. We also have some solar recharging systems where the solar recharger has adapters so you can plug in the various devices so that they can be recharged. The Marines went out with several of those systems. We have several Army patrol units that are out with several of those systems to figure out how they can reduce that trail of batteries and lighten their load so that if a soldier is out on a 2-day mission, their load is now lighter than it was before.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I learned when I had some folks from PEO Soldier in here a couple of weeks ago was that a very small amount of weight taken away from a soldier as he's walking around for those kinds of extended times can make a huge difference in how he or she's able to respond to whatever it is they'll have to respond to. I think somebody figures, well, 2 pounds when you're already carrying X number of pounds around doesn't make that much of a difference. It can make a huge difference, can it?
It can. And, you know, we want to build flexibility and resilience in the systems that our soldiers carry. And we have to make sure that that soldier is still able to do the primary mission. So we're looking at all sorts of strategies for the future. I mean, perhaps the equipment doesn't have a battery in it, but it plugs into a universal battery that can charge multiple systems.
Mm-hmm.
We're all trying to figure out how to lighten that load. So we're looking at materials. We're looking at batteries. We're looking at every commercial off-the-shelf technology that's out there, as well as investing in research and development to come up with things that will certainly empower our soldiers to perform.
What are the tough parts, if any, about collaborating with the other branches? Where do maybe sometimes the exchanges not of information not go as smoothly as you'd like?
I wouldn't say the exchanges don't go smoothly, but I would say we have different needs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those areas is biofuels. If you take a look at biofuels, the most critical fuel platform is that of a jet airplane. And so the Air Force is really taking the lead in biofuels because their fuel is the most critical. The planes are very particular, and if they can fly on a fuel, then the rest of the military can use that fuel as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we've worked really hard at is trying to have one fuel in theater, which means that we are not restricted by running out of fuel A and trying to figure out how to use fuel B.
Mm-hmm.
One fuel in the theater, and JP-8 is what we use as a strategy. So we are letting and certainly working closely with the Air Force to take the lead on biofuels, and then we're working to certify our equipment to make sure that it can run on the same biofuels that is critical for those jet airplanes.
Did you run across any kinds of maybe turf issues or anything like that when you tried to prioritize those and kind of dole out who was going to have say over what?
Honestly, we haven't. I mean, when you get down to scientists, scientists like working together.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get some of the leaders out of the way, and no offense to green suiters, but, you know, some of the military out of the way, the scientists all love collaboration because they can all benefit from that.
It's a fascinating conversation. You have a collaborative event actually coming up that I want to talk about when we come back from the break with Catherine Hammack. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and the Environment. I got it right that time. And in the office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army. And we'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Close to 4,000 U.S. Army soldiers are in the middle of a six-week test designed to assess how the Army can integrate new technologies into battlefield operations. The network integration exercise at Fort Bliss and White Sands Missile Range is experimenting with the Army's push to create a single integrated battlefield IT network and to determine how easily new technologies from industry can be brought into that network. They're testing more than 30 new technologies in the current exercise.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Do you know us? You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life. Yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Himalaya Herbal Healthcare.
This July 4th, you'll be watching fireworks emit sparkling arrays of red, white, and, well, did you ever notice the blues just aren't as good? Bursts of blue fireworks just don't have the same brightness or intensity of other colors, says Washington College chemistry professor John Conkling.
In order to get a bright color up in the sky, you need high temperature, and the chemicals that emit blue light are not stable at high temperatures.
Chemists have been trying to engineer a solution for years, but Conkling says so far, no luck.
Countries do have red, white, and green as their national colors. They're very fortunate. We chose red, white, and blue, so it's harder here in the U.S. to get our national colors up there in the sky on the 4th of July.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
John Barry, he's director of the Office of Personnel Management and our first winner of the second annual Causey Awards.
One of the things that I'm so proud about is our incredible team. This award that I'm accepting here, you know, with Mike's great name on it, but it's not fair for me to accept it on my own. I'm here to accept it on a team of incredible people, both career and political, who do a phenomenal job. But
hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today is Catherine Hammack. She is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and the Environment. And we're talking about energy use in the Army. And there is an event that I wanted to ask you about, Catherine, that is coming up in a little bit less than a month, I guess 3 weeks or so, called the U.S. Army and Air Force Energy Forum. And it is happening at the Crystal City Hyatt. It's the 19th and 20th of July, and we'll post some information about it in the link to your website at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The purpose, I think, of this is pretty interesting. Provides an opportunity for attendees to hear the views of and interact with senior leadership from the Department of Defense, federal agencies, Congress, and industry regarding the strategic importance and future direction of Army and Air Force energy. I mean, this is really high level, and as I go through the agenda, you have both civilian and uniformed leaders at the very highest levels. The message that I took away is this is a very important issue for both branches of the service that are putting this on from the very top down to indicate that everybody should really be paying attention here.
Absolutely. Energy is a very critical issue because without energy, the Army stands still and silent. We can't move and we can't communicate. So energy is a critical mission requirement. And in this energy forum, we are working to engage with industry and academia, as well as the military leaders, to discuss what we are doing and what kind of support we need. Because we all know that the budgets are declining. Mm-hmm. And we are looking to partner more closely with industry on strategies and technologies to help us reduce the amount of energy we use. And we're already doing that in several ways, but in this forum, we're going to be talking about alternative fuel vehicles. We're going to be talking about energy and cyber, some of the alternate financing that is available in collaboration, as well as renewable energy and installation energy management.
I wanted to ask you about some of the alternative fuels that will be discussed here, because alternative fuels are interesting to me because, as I mentioned during the break, we're looking at not just in the military but in the private sector at various kinds of alternative fuels for the really big, grandiose projects that everybody thinks about. And yet, that convoy that passes me on 270 when I'm on the weekend – their use of energy is probably just as important to the bottom line when we talk about budgets, when you combine all of them together, as some of the big projects. So maybe give me a view of the entire landscape of alternative fuels and the possibilities that are out there.
Absolutely. And when we talk about fuels, I mean, that's all the way from renewable energy, ethanol, some of the biofuels and some of the traditional fuels. We use fuels in with our soldiers. We talked about the soldier power mm-hmm. and lightening the load on the soldier in our bases. I mean, it's primarily electricity that we use there with some natural gas and other backup fuels. So we're looking at how do we produce electricity from alternate sources, which are wind and solar, even geothermal, biomass. And we are partnering with industry on all of those strategies and technologies across our bases. On vehicles, it's very interesting. We have both tactical and non-tactical fleets. Our non-tactical fleets could be the electric vehicles that you see out there today, whether they're the small golf cart size up to even some of the hybrid SUVs. And when we're procuring our vehicles, we're putting a higher priority on alternate fueled vehicles that give us that adaptability and flexibility, as well as allowing us to reduce our petroleum usage. But tactical vehicles is a very interesting area that requires a little more research and development.
Mm-hmm.
I met with some of the motor manufacturers who are bidding on a replacement motor for some of our helicopters. And the challenge to them is we want a motor that is drop-in replacement to our existing bodies that uses 25% less fuel, yet is able to carry twice the payload, which means that we use less fuel for twice the mission.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what we want out of some of this research and development and this collaboration with industry, is give us more by using less.
Do you get a sense that some of your industry partners are walking away from these meetings, shaking their heads, going, oh, man, how are we ever going to be able to pull that off? Or are you getting a sense that the response is, yeah, we can do that. We just have to work at it, be innovative, and we can make that happen.
Well, I've had someone say, this is a brand new army we're working with, one that's receptive to these new ideas and new ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing to us strategies and technologies that are working in the private sector. And that's really what we want. All of the automotive industry and industry across the whole is looking at strategies that are reducing less energy, whether you're looking at reduced fleet or improved fuel economy, which is one of those requirements out there. We're even seeing it in some of the Army Corps of Engineer vehicles. They've got some boats in New York Harbor that are running partially powered by rechargeable batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And then they converted three vessels recently to biodiesel. And these are some of the big barges that you might see on those rivers that are requiring a lot of work right now with the flooding. So we're looking at all of our tactical vehicles and our non-tactical vehicles on reducing that energy use. So when you see that convoy running down the road, it's not burning up as much fuel mm-hmm. as you might think.
Oh, we've got to take another break. When we come back, I want to ask you about some more of the sessions that are going on at this event. And then later on in the hour, I'd like to talk. You used the magic word procurement, and it's like the old game show where the monkey comes up and all the confetti and stuff. That always sets off something in my head. So I want to talk about changes that the acquisition team in the Army has seen as a result of what you're trying to do later on in the hour. But when we come back, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the Energy Forum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Catherine Hammock, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, my guest on Pentagon Solutions. We'll be right back.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. A federal appeals court has upheld President Obama's health care overhaul. A three-judge panel in Ohio decided that Congress can require Americans to have minimum insurance coverage. NBC's Pete Williams says more than 30 legal challenges have been filed over the law.
This is the first time a Republican-appointed judge has voted to find the health care law constitutional.
Other news, earlier today at the White House, President Obama made it clear that raising taxes for oil companies and the super wealthy must be part of any deficit reduction plan.
I think it's only fair to ask an oil company or a corporate jet owner that has done so well to give up that tax break that no other business enjoys.
Congressional Republicans insist any deficit reduction plan must be limited to just spending cuts, no tax increases. And according to a study by ID Analytics, roughly 1 in 15 American adults is intentionally committing fraud by lying about their Social Security number, date of birth, or other personal information on credit applications. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
How do we celebrate summer? Saving money with e-values.
Member Nicole Recker on the Sam's Club e-value saving celebration. June 29th through July 4th, save on top of already low Sam's Club prices, like $50 off a Samsung 40-inch LED TV,
$2 off artisan fresh chicken sausage, $1 off seedless watermelon,
and more. Not a member? Join June 29th through July 4th. Get the money-saving benefit plus members enjoy all year. E-values at Sam's Club. Savings made simple. Supplies are limited and may not be available in all clubs. One item per membership, no rain checks.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
Stop by Ace this July 4th weekend and get $10 off Royal Paint after mail-in rebate.
The weekend is coming!
And quickly turn your painting to-do list...
The weekend is coming!
...into a to-done list.
The weekend is coming!
So visit your local Ace and get saving, then get your weekend back. At Ace, the helpful place. 4-gallon rebate limit on purchases made July 1st through 4th.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
See store for additional conditions and limitations.
To defend our nation effectively, missile defense must be affordable, available, and reliable. Lockheed Martin's team for ground-based mid-course defense is the right team to meet this challenge. Our proven performance-based logistics capabilities have been refined on more than 50 programs and honored by 9 Secretary of Defense awards. Increasing confidence and readiness while reducing sustainment cost is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers. For ground-based mid-course defense, the Lockheed Martin team has the know-how for success, the people, the processes, the performance. Together, we have built strong government-industry partnerships, led the industry in performance-based logistics, and built systems that have achieved more than 50 intercepts in test and combat, assuring affordability, availability, and reliability for ground-based mid-course defense is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
John Barry, he's director of the Office of Personnel Management and our first winner of the second annual Causey Awards.
One of the things that I'm so proud about is our incredible team. This award that I'm accepting here, you know, with Mike's great name on it, but it's not fair for me to accept it on my own. I'm here to accept it on a team of incredible people, both career and political, who do a phenomenal job. But
hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Pentagon Solutions. Every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour, we talk to experts in the world of the Pentagon about solutions to the challenges the agency's facing. And my expert today is Catherine Hammack. She is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and the Environment. And we were talking in the last segment about the Army and Air Force Energy Forum that is happening the 19th and 20th of July in Crystal City. And I mentioned we'll have the details and the agenda and so forth linked up at federalnewsradio.com. I talk about cybersecurity on this program regularly, and you have a panel discussion. One of the sessions is titled Energy and Cyber. And I was interested to see that you not only had a moderator from the Air Force, Harold Sanborn, and General Lord from the Army. I'm sorry, from the Air Force. But you also had Patricia Hoffman from the Energy Department lined up here. And as I looked at the purpose of the conference, it says there that other agencies are being involved here. Talk about the role that other agencies play, not just in this forum, but also as you try to solve some of these challenges that you're dealing with when it comes to energy.
We're working very closely with other agencies, whether it's DOE or even GSA, to ensure that we are coming to the same, we're approaching things and collaborating on a funding basis, on a technology basis, on a brain power basis.
Mm-hmm.
So DOD and DOE have a memorandum of understanding of how we're going to collaborate together on things. In this case, energy and cyber, it goes much beyond the Army and Air Force, but addresses all aspects of the federal government. We even have Homeland Security, who is questioning, are we appropriately addressing the vulnerabilities we have of energy in the United States? We have a vulnerable electric grid. We have vulnerable natural gas pipelines. If you want to take a look at what happened about 10 years ago in California, what people call the Enron bubble, mm-hmm. a lot of that is attributable to a natural gas, El Paso natural gas pipeline that broke.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are unable to power things, what does that do to cybersecurity?
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at energy and grid vulnerability, we want to address those vulnerabilities and ensure that we have a robust enough system that gives us the protections we need. And so DOE has some strategies and technologies, Homeland Security does, GSA does, and the agencies are working closely together to try and address energy security and vulnerability in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about the president's priorities, I mean, he talks about our being independent from some of the petroleum tethers that we have mm-hmm. with other nations. We need to look at how we're addressing energy consumption in the United States to improve our own energy security and vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. More specifically about energy and cyber, as I think about it in the context that you're talking about it, it's almost a chicken and egg situation, because without one, the other is tremendously handicapped or fails completely. And so it's kind of this endless circle of which do you pay attention to the most and first, I guess.
Well, we also have a lot of digital controls on our utility networks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of someone being able to hack in and shut down a transformer station, I mean, you really are looking then what kind of cybersecurity do we have on our energy grid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how are you monitoring and tracking that?
Yeah. It's one of those things that those circles that never ends, and we'll continue our conversation, which will end unfortunately very soon when we come back from this break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll talk about some of the challenges that you've seen in the procurement cycle when In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
The House of Representatives wants to stop printing so many documents. Instead, lawmakers are looking at how they could use smartphones and tablet computers to view, edit, and send bills, letters, and a host of other documents. The goal is twofold: to save money and to speed up the time it takes for lawmakers to introduce bills and share other documents. House lawmakers spend more than $5 million a year on printing, including $1.7 million on printing bills, of which only 3% become law.
If you're in federal IT, CDWG has the people and products to seamlessly integrate all your communications into a single, unified, accessible communications network. So if your employees are scattered hither and yon, visit cdwg.com/unified. We'll make it seem like they're all hither, not yon. CDWG. People who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how switching solutions from HP can decrease network complexity and increase business agility.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Air Inc. Yesterday's attack in Kabul comes as NATO-led forces prepare to hand security responsibility to Afghans in 7 areas. This will be the beginning of a gradual transition process that will end with all foreign troops leaving Afghanistan by 2014. A 2-day conference to discuss the transition process was due to begin in a government building in the center of the city today. Violence before the attack on the Intercontinental was already rising at a record pace. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a saying that lightning never strikes the same place twice. Airport operators know that's not the case, which is why they rely on ARINC to provide the most advanced lightning warning systems available. It allows personnel to get to safety, then back out on the tarmac in the shortest amount of time to keep you moving. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
ACT IAC is looking for a few good members. Do you have what it takes? Are you a techie or a govvie? Do you want to make a positive impact? Can you bring fresh ideas to the table? Join ACT IAC today and help solve government's toughest IT challenges while advancing your career and making great new friends and contacts. To become a member, visit actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Or call 703-208-4800. ACT IAC wants you.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. About to wrap up today's Pentagon Solutions with Catherine Hammack, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and the Environment. And we've talked throughout the show from a little bit here and there about the procurement chain and how the process may have changed a little bit here and there. But I'd like to kind of pull that a little bit together before we wrap up. Has there been had to be a mindset change? Has there had to be a process change because of the different requirements that you're now asking for and the different things that you're trying to do with net zero and some of the other energy initiatives in the Army?
In the procurement process, we've made energy a key performance parameter. So in every one of our major acquisitions, whether it is a new ground combat vehicle or a new helicopter engine, or a weapons system, energy and the effect of energy on the mission is really something that we're looking for creativity and innovation from our partners in industry. So if they come to us with an idea that we can achieve your goals, yet we can do it in a more energy-efficient manner, then that certainly raises our attention and our interest. Because what we really want to do is enable the fighter to go further. We view energy as a force enabler,
mm-hmm.
because we really want to be able to go further on less fuel. We want to have fewer convoys on the road. What's interesting is when we started looking at how many convoys supplied the mission, it used to be one in every 24 convoys had a casualty, mm-hmm. whether that's someone wounded or someone killed, and that could be civilian or military. Right now, it's one in every 46. So we're providing more protection, and we're able to ensure there's fewer casualties, but there still are casualties.
Mm-hmm.
And so energy security and reducing the amount of fuel that we use is really critical to our mission effectiveness and to saving lives.
There's a lot more I'd like to get into with you about procurement and some of the other issues that we've hit on today, and we're almost out of time. And so I want to ask you if you'll come back at some point in a couple of months maybe, and we can continue this conversation about some of the things we didn't get to today. Would love to have you on again.
I would love to come back talking about my favorite subjects and energy and what we're doing to help make this world better for future generations.
Excellent. As we close out, tell me about BRAC. I mentioned during the break we did a series on BRAC a couple of weeks ago and a lot of resources about how BRAC will impact the area around D.C., all over the country, the branches of the military and so on, the economies of the areas where the bases are located that are either closing or growing. But talk about BRAC and the impact of BRAC specifically in the energy area for a bit.
Well, BRAC has enabled us to consolidate our bases, which means we have fewer bases to maintain, operate, and power. And some of the bases that are closing are those that might have been older or less efficient. We're consolidating training missions. We're consolidating centers of excellence. Those buildings that we're building new on the facilities that are remaining are much more energy efficient. Most of them are LEED certified. And that means that our building inventory has improved in quality. We might have the same amount of square footage, but it's more efficient than we had before.
Mm-hmm.
So really, BRAC has been a great enabler for us, both from a mission standpoint and from an energy efficiency standpoint.
Has it given you an opportunity, too, to try some things that you wanted to and maybe wouldn't have had a chance to in other contexts?
Well, it has, because some of the moves have been very large moves. So we've put in great ground source heat pump systems. We've done some great building design that on solar design and on passive solar design, which really are benchmarks for the design community.
It's been terrific to have you here.